The content of this podcast is based on medical fact and evidence-based practice from credible authoritative sources, but is not a substitute for your institution's policies, procedures, common sense, or good judgment. The views and opinions are those of Eric Bauer and FlightBridge Ed in their entirety. This is the FlightBridge Ed Podcast, critical care and emergency medicine education for nurses and paramedics. Here's your host, Eric Bauer.
I planned to smile right now because I knew I was going to be a little nervous. And I didn't want to believe the feeling that you have on the stage. I wanted to believe how I actually feel. I'm so happy to be here. I feel like I've found my tribe. You guys, I've loved talking with you guys the last couple of days. I finally feel like I'm in a room that feels right. It's comfy here. So thanks to the FlightBridge Ed guys, Ashley, Eric Bauer, Mike Riquette, all you guys, you have made an awesome conference. My name is Ginger Locke. I teach at a community college in Austin, Texas. And the very first class I taught was called Emergency Procedures. And I thought, perfect. I was fresh out of the field. And I thought, okay, good. I know this one. I know psychomotor skills. This is something I can teach. I don't have to refresh on all the pathophys and deep, deep stuff that it takes to be an educator. I thought, okay, good. I'm gonna feel comfy here. And it was comfortable. The first couple of weeks, great. I felt like I knew best practices. The students were doing really, really well in lab. They were picking up things like IVs and intubation and med admin. And remember, these are paramedic students, right? So they haven't seen much of the wicked, and we're going to talk about what wicked means. Everything's going great until the first day of testing. And I think they're ready, and I sit down in my chair, and I've got the student in front of me, and they're going to do IV start, right? And this calm, confident, skillful student in practice transformed before my eyes. Transformed. Suddenly he was sweaty. His pupils looked huge. He was dropping things. He was misnaming pieces of equipment. And at the end of the skill, I just remember looking at him, and he looked at me, and he mouthed to me. He said, right? And I thought, I don't know, actually. And he said, at the end, he's super receptive to feedback. He was like, any tips, any advice? And I gave the most ridiculous piece of advice. It was advice given to me. It was advice given to you. And it's probably advice you're still giving. And it's ridiculous. I told him, it's okay. Give it a year. Give it a year. All this nervousness will wear off. Give it time. Time was my prescription for that learner. I wasn't going to teach him anything. Just over time, the shakes start to diminish. You start being able to, and medics say this over and over again on the podcast. They'll say, it takes a good year or two to settle in. A year or two? That is unacceptable. So as an educator, I'm the purpose of this talk and the primary thesis of this talk is it's time to bring a little bit of relief to that suffering that we go through in those first years. You can do this as educators. Start teaching people how to modulate their own arousal, modulate their overstimulation in the interest of peak performance. So I've mentioned this wicked. What is wicked? Wicked is a term I use instead of saying stress, because stress can be useful. Stress, positive stress, eustress, is positive, and it springs you into action, and that's where we see really peak performance. You do great under that. You perceive that you've got a challenge in front of you, and you actually have more peak performance than when you're understimulated. Wicked is distress. Wicked is when you've gone so far, and you're so far overstimulated, and I was thinking about it as I was watching that video, just the alarm going off presents a little bit of wicked. And this differentiation between positive stress and negative stress is all based on a theory called the appraisal theory. And it's very, very simple. You basically walk into a situation and you assess two things. you say, do I have the resources, do I have the abilities, am I equipped, am I ready to handle the requirements of that situation, the demands of that situation? That's it. And it's somewhat subconscious, right? You walk in a room and you suddenly realize you're in over your head. If you walk in the room and you realize, like, great, I'm ready for this, I'm prepared for this, we call it a challenge and everything goes well. When you assess a situation and you perceive, and perceive is an important word here, this is based on your perception, which we can tweak a little bit. If you perceive that you are not ready for that situation, we call that a threat. It's a stress response, it's a threat response, and it kicks in these survival mechanisms that are very, very hard to modulate. Because they're strong, they're adaptive. It's your operating system from the last 200,000 years, right? It's your monkey brain that Faison talks about. This is a graph. I brought my whiteboard with me because I'm a classroom teacher, and I wanted to show you something I drew on a whiteboard. So this is a chart that I first saw on a website called First 10 and EM. Justin Morgenstern has one of the best articles on performance and arousal states. And in his graph, he basically showed that peak performance, when you're on point, is when you're in this happy flow state, and that is the challenge state. The black part, when you're bored, we're actually poor performers there. We actually don't perform well when we're bored. We're understimulated, it's the routine call, and you sometimes get caught behind the eight ball in those calls. I was tempted to say we're never there, but we actually are there sometimes. The happy place is where you want to be. The red zone, the stress zone, the wicked zone, when you've decided that there is a threat, and I don't mean decided consciously, when your bodies perceive that there's a threat. The red zone is where ideally you would never be. Learning doesn't happen here. Ideally you would never be here for two reasons. One, performance suffers. And two, in this zone, cortisol is released in abundance. And cortisol is a nasty chemical in the wrong amounts in our body. It contributes to many known long-term health effects. So if we can stay out of here, that would be great. Luckily, there's a guy working really hard on this, and his name is Michael Loria. He's been on the podcast. And he wrote a paper, he is one of many authors, you see other names you might recognize up there, Scott Weingart, Jason Brooks. This was just published in the Annals of Emergency Medicine in December of 2017, so it's fresh. And his general thesis is that we can absolutely teach these skills, and that performance psychologists know what to do. They know how to help somebody perform under pressure. So let's start bringing those known psychologically enhancing skills, bring it to medicine. And he gave a title that's the longest title ever written, so I would have to read it off my slides. Psychological Skills to Improve Emergency Care Providers' Performance Under Stress. And in it, he lists four performance enhancing skills. I'm going to talk about two that have the most heavy weight of evidence behind them. The first is self-talk. And sometimes I get a little pushback on this one, because you think I'm telling you that you want to go stand in front of your mirror and do a little affirmation in the morning and tell yourself you're good enough. That's not what I'm talking about. Self-talk, psychologists refer to self-talk as the key to cognitive control. It's the ability to insert a new script, a completely different script than what your physiology is telling you, wash out that physiology and put in a new script, something positive. The statements that you say to yourself need to be truthful, however. Okay, they need to be true. If you have to already be good at EKGs, so when someone hands you the EKG, and this is like the wicked call, and you're holding it, you can say to yourself, I know the rules of EKGs. Right? And settle yourself down a little bit. In Mike Loria's paper, these are the recommendations. These are the key recommendations for what your self-talk should look like. And I hope you leave here today starting to think about the stories you're telling yourself on calls. Because believe it or not, you have this little monologue going on in a call that has nothing to do with the clinical care. It's just a running story that you're telling yourself, and you can change that story. You can rewrite the script. He says, keep the phrases short, that the phrases should be first person and present tense. They should be positive. And that's why there's a picture of John Smoltz here. John Smoltz was a pitcher that struggled initially, and he was the Atlanta Braves' hired performance psychologist. And what they found out was in his self-talk, he was saying to himself where he didn't want the ball to go. And they just tweaked that. And so he started thinking and saying to himself where he did want the ball to go. It seems so intuitive, but this positive self-talk. Say it with intention. Remember, you are battling an operating system that is much stronger than you, right? These have to be intentional, and you have to be somewhat strong in what you're saying to yourself. Speak kindly and repeat it often. This will only work if this is something that you practice on the regular, right? If you just bring this tool out of your pocket on the wicked calls, you need to make it your best friend, one that you bring out every single call, so it's primed and ready. So start thinking about what it is that you want to say to yourself. Prior to the talk, I thought, you know, I'm a little nervous. I thought to myself, I know this stuff. This is stuff I think about all the time. And I just kept saying, I know this stuff. And Chris Hicks tweeted about this. He said, and I love this. I love what he said. He said that he calls it a power phrase. His power phrase is, this is a challenge. When a tough case comes in, and he feels a little overwhelmed, he says out loud, this is a challenge. And he's going straight to the heart of the appraisal process. He's not letting this feeling of threat come over him. He's telling the situation what's going on. Because for him, all of it is a challenge. He's very skillful. Ashley Liebig, she says just a simple, we got this. And she says it with her crew. Dr. Swami Nathan, he says as typical as, we can do this. It's so simple, and he does it out loud, and that's another important piece for everybody in this room. You guys, as leaders, can assist others, people new to the discipline, you can assist others with this by making your self-talk out loud talk, okay, with your team. Another skill that we know a lot about, there's a lot of evidence, is just very simply controlling your breathing. Right? So I'm not suggesting that we roll out a yoga mat and we take a time out on a call and we do a little meditating. Although martial artists and people who meditate and people who do yoga, they have known for centuries that breathing modulates arousal. There's a bi-directional relationship between breathing and your emotional state. So how do you do this? It's simply called box breathing or square breathing. This is one recommended way to do it. You don't have to do it identical to this. The key is, here the key, it's just about controlling your breathing. It's about bringing back the locus of control when you're starting to feel ramped up. It's about bringing back the locus of control where you can control your own physiology. How amazing is that we have this feature in our body that can, you know, breathing can get out of control. Right, this autonomic, involuntary breathing can just go for it, and we, in an instant, you can voluntarily control a piece of your autonomic system. There are not many other parts of the body where you can do that. It's quite spectacular. So you inhale for 4 seconds. You hold that inhalation for 4 seconds. Exhale for 4 seconds, and at the end of exhalation, hold it again for 4 seconds. Mike Loria talks about this. Is it happening? Yeah, I'll project. Mike Loria talks about this, and he says this square breathing doesn't work for him either. It's just about bringing the control. All right, this is a piece I really, really wanted to talk about. You guys have heard of stress inoculation? Have you heard of this? Yeah? Stress inoculation is putting people into simulated stressful environments and giving them a chance to practice these skills. And there's a awesome way to do it, and then there are a few ways you could do it that you could be not getting the most bang for your buck. So let's talk about how to inoculate someone to stress. This is like building up a stress immune system, if you will. In stress inoculation, you're not working on medicine. Okay, you're not working on taking care of sick people. What you're working on in the context of taking care of simulated sick people, you're working on modulating your own arousal. You're working on these psychological skills. Okay, so you can tell the learner, don't worry about the medicine right now, like do your best with the medicine, but the feedback at the end, I'm wanting to know how these psychological skills worked for you. Practice your breathing, bring in your mantra. So how do we inoculate people? The very first step is explain the stress response. You think you know the stress response. You think you do, and you felt it, but it may be difficult to explain it to someone else. So the things you'll tell them, you may feel your heart pounding in your chest. You may lose fine motor control. You may find yourself not being able to think very clearly. You may get a little sweaty. You may get something that's absolutely dreadful, and you've all experienced it, I know, something called auditory exclusion. You can't hear very well. You can't take in this auditory information. A new learner doesn't know that that's going to happen to them. They've seen stress, and they've had stress, but this auditory exclusion is something that you see when things get really wicked. All right, so explain to them, this is physiology. This is what's going to happen when we start ramping up these scenarios. Perfectly normal, perfectly expected. It's a core feature of being human. We all feel this way. Let's talk about how to control it. And then you start teaching these coping skills, things like breathing, things like using a mantra. And this next recommendation is important. So when you're doing your scenarios, you like to present like curveballs, right? You like to throw them kind of some tough things. When we're doing stress inoculation, you don't need to do that. All you need to do is like turn on that alarm that we were hearing, just doing that, or having a crying baby, you know, audio recording going. Okay, it doesn't have to be incredibly medically complex. So tell them exactly what medicine you're going to do. And then you slowly, there are very few words in this slide because I want you to hear the slowly. Throwing them in, you know, head first into the worst imaginable wicked call, this wicked simulation from the beginning, will only teach them that their psyche's a little fragile. It will kick the feet out from under them. So you slowly increase their exposure. As you start planning for the wicked, some of you have been seeing the wicked for 10, 20, many, many years. And what you know, and I think what I know, I haven't been doing it quite that long, but I think what I know, because I've talked to enough of you guys, is that the wicked still pops up sometimes. There's always something novel. There's something new, a scenario you haven't found yourself in. And the brain registers new things. If we don't have a pattern for it, we usually call that a threat, right? It's a survival mechanism. So as you plan for this wicked, do two things. Start thinking about controlling your breathing, and start thinking about what your mantra is. Some of you may already have one. And start talking about it with people brand new to the profession. When I first started teaching, I thought people either had the ability to handle stress or they didn't. And that was kind of true because I was dealing with adults. Some of them had like some type of challenging scenarios where they were a free throw shooter, or they were a pitcher, or they played a musical instrument and they had some of this stress exposure. But some of them came to us completely without any of that practice. And it isn't that they have these innate abilities. It's not that it's innate. You're born being able to handle stress. We're actually born to survive through stress, and it kind of looks ugly. So start teaching these psychological skills to your colleagues and to the new guys. Thanks for everything. It was good talking to you.
This has been a production of the Flight Bridge Ed Podcast, leading the way in pre-hospital critical care and emergency medicine education.